Hey, everybody. It's July 21st, 2020, and you're listening to Scott Johnson and Frog Pants Plays Daily. So it turns out it's possible to really like a video game that has a terrible combat system. And for me, that video game is Super Paper Mario, The Origami King. I think the art in this game is fantastic. The writing is wonderful. The characters are great. The concept is great. The entire conceit of why the entire Mushroom Kingdom is all folded up and messed up right now is great. All of that stuff is great. The moment-to-moment game controls really well. I like filling holes with confetti as much as the next guy. I think the weird emo Origami King is a great villain. I like everything about this game except for the combat. The combat sucks. I kind of try to avoid it now. A, because I'm not really getting XP out of it, because this isn't really a true RPG in the tradition of the Paper Mario series anyway, or at least the original couple. And B, it's basically an extension of a puzzle game and not a fun puzzle game. So I don't like that part of it. The combat is a little stinky, and I think they should have stuck to just turn-based, bonk them on the head, Mario RPG style RPG fighting. Even if you're not going to include a bunch of XP or other RPG elements in your game, just let me fight the old-fashioned way. I really, really dislike this new way of fighting. That being said, I still am really enjoying myself, and it's worth it to see the rest of the game. So that's my quick take. It's not really a review, just a thought, okay? That's what I think of Super Paper Mario, The Origami King. Maybe next time they'll get the combat right. Metacritic will delay user reviews for games. Long time coming. Metacritic will now delay these reviews for games for 36 hours after release. The company announced this just this week. Comes a few weeks after the release of The Last of Us Part 2, which was review bombed by Metacritic. Here's what they said in a quote. We recently implemented the 36-hour waiting period for all user reviews in our games section to ensure our gamers have time to play these games before writing their reviews. It's a nice way of saying people leave hideous reviews without actually playing the game first. This new waiting period for user reviews has been rolled out across Metacritic's game section and was based on data-driven research and with the input of critics and industry experts. So Metacritic user reviews remains one of the great toxic corners of gamer internet, I believe, and it's a terrible place to go. I don't know why you'd ever rely on those reviews for anything. I also appreciate the idea that a lot of gamers think that that's their place to take a stand. If they have a very strong feeling about something, whether you think that feeling is good or bad, whether you agree with their stance or not, they feel like that's a stage they can get on and express their feelings of frustration. I think that's an important thing, but I don't think it should be the user reviews on Metacritic, a place where people go to try to get reviews of actual products, not people mad about a thing they haven't actually played yet. I might even agree with your frustration that you're expressing over there, but maybe play the game first and then express whatever frustration you have. Same thing happens on Steam with Steam review bombs. I can't stand those either for the same reason. The only difference there is you have to actually own the game and have played it. I don't know what the limits are in terms of how much you've played it, but you have to own it and have played it in order to leave any kind of feedback or review on the game. That's at least a step in the right direction. I think this is fine. 36 hours is great and all, but I think it should be also some other way of verifying whether they have the game or not. I don't know how you do that. This isn't the platform they bought the game on, so there's no way to track their information. So there really isn't a way to do it. If it were me and I was Metacritic, I don't think you get any benefit out of user reviews. None. I can't think of a single time where that's helped me in any decision making. But the reviews you collect, I do use all the time. I like to go over there and see what the general score is. I like to dig deeper and read the actual review via a link or whatever. That's what Metacritic is for. It's not for screaming babies. Send your angry feedback below or in an email, scott@frogpants.com. Microsoft Flight Simulator will ship on 10 DVDs and still requires a download to launch the thing. Microsoft Flight Simulator launches on Windows PC on August 18th in a month, and the vast majority of fans will purchase the game digitally. Nonetheless, Microsoft is partnering with European companies for a physical release of the game, if you even call these a game. The physical edition will ship on 10 double-sided DVDs and come packed in a special accordion-style box. It sounds outlandish, but it's actually a boon for those with slow or severely constrained internet connections. Details of the retail release come from Aerosoft, a developer and publisher of simulation hardware and software. Mathis Koch, I know I'm not getting that right, took to the company's official forums on Monday to make the announcement. The box set will include 90 gigabytes of data and will still require an update from Microsoft before the game will launch, although how big that update is, nobody knows. So do people still play Microsoft Flight Simulator? Again, saying play is weird because I know that's not a game so much as it is a simulation of flying, and that's pretty cool. I used to know people who love that and probably are still loving it and love playing it. And they buy all the extra hardware and the HOTAS and the freaking fake little cockpit business and all that. I mean, I actually really, I can respect the desire to play that stuff, but it just isn't for me. It's overwhelming. I need more kind of arcade feel to my flight games, no matter what they are. So they're not selling this to me. I was never going to be the guy to buy it. So take my opinion as a grain of salt. Maybe take it as a Metacritic user review and ignore it.
Email.
Quick email today. This one from It's Too Scary. I just watched the July 16th episode of Frog Pants Plays Daily regarding the digital-only consoles. I think the price of digital games should be cheaper than the $59.99 that they currently share with physical copies. I understand there's a cost for listing the games through the various platforms they're on, but does this equal the cost of manufacturing, print, and shipping? I would like to get your thoughts on this. Thanks. From It's Too Scary. Well, It's Too Scary. This has been a topic of conversation for a long time, as digital has continued to rise in popularity. And retail physical copies have continued to exist, but have dropped a little in their overall market share. One would have thought that you would see the price structure shift to a little cheaper for the digital, same price or more for physical, right? That didn't happen, as you were alluding to in your email. Why didn't it happen? Because I really do feel like an industry that is slow to see their prices rise, they are slow to see inflation take an effect on this market, on their specific industry. They're happy to get the extra money wherever they can get it. And I don't think at any point, anybody at any major publishing company or anybody else involved in video games once said, well, why don't we only sell the digital copy for $20 because we're easily still making money on top of what our costs are, and then let's just sell the $60 physical one because we got to pay for all the physical stuff. I think what they all said instead was, hey, what if we got the same amount of money for way less costs and overhead by selling it digitally, and it's still the same price because we think buyers will just pay that as we do for physical editions. And you know what? They were right. People did. So I don't think there's a big push to change this. I agree with you in principle. Obviously, it is costing them less when you don't have to think about printing and pressing discs and all the logistics involved with moving a disc around the country in terms of getting it to retailers and everything else. All of that stuff, those costs simply go away and they're replaced with much, much lower storage and data transfer costs. However, they saw it as an opportunity to make a bunch more money. So that's what they're doing. And I don't think that's going to change. It would take a mandate from the players. And I don't think players care enough. Players would rather just get the game and play it. So don't expect that to change, unfortunately. I love your feedback, and I would love more of it. Send it here to the show. You can do it at scott@frogpants.com or comment below. I check those as well and sometimes read those on the show as well. And now of little consequence, some time ago, let's call it a year ago, I played the entirety of Resident Evil 7 on stream. And that game scared the crap out of me most of the time that I played it. And so I picked out a piece that I just thought was kind of funny and reminiscent of how I felt about playing that game. So here's me freaking out because this wall explodes.
Ah! Oh!
That will do it for me. Go to frogpantsplays.com for details. If you're trying to track down any part of this show, you can find it there. Or you can email me once again, scott@frogpants.com. Frogpantsplays.com is the place to go, as I mentioned. And if you like what you hear and see, consider supporting me directly at patreon.com/frogpants. That's going to do it for me. We'll see you tomorrow. Read that whole thing over again. We recently experimented. Shit. I can't freaking read. Critics and industry oh man. It's July 22nd, 2020. I'm Scott Johnson, and this is Frog Pants Plays Daily. Check out this shirt my daughter got for my birthday. KK Slider concert shirt. Live show. No admission required. Look at him sitting there. Naked little white dog with his guitar. Says 8 p.m. on a Saturday, but we all know he's there all day, playing all day long. What is that, a warm-up? What are you even doing out there, you weird dog? All right, I wanted to talk just real quick before we get things going here proper. I've been playing more Ghost Recon Breakpoint, which had a lot of problems at launch in 2019 when it launched in October. And that was a real bummer because I really like Wildlands a lot. But I also remember that Wildlands launched in a pretty rough state. And over time, they patched that thing up very nicely to be one of my favorite open world games of the entire generation. I'm playing on PC, so there's no real generation here, but you know what I mean. Anyways, this is, I would say, when I was a kid. That game has improved greatly, and this latest patch, which they announced at the Ubisoft Forward event, was one of the things they were adding is putting back in the AI teammates, which I missed terribly from Wildlands, so I was pretty excited about that happening. And so I went in there, and I've been messing around with those. I didn't know this. Did you guys know that you can go in there and make your characters, your AI teammates can all be a Terminator if you want to, because they have that Terminator event. So they have all these models in there and skins anyway. So you can have like four Terminators chasing you around and having your back all the time. And if you want, you can look like Kyle Reese from the Terminator movies. And then you got four Terminators that are following you around doing your job for you. It's pretty cool. Anyway, I'm just here to say I think that game's improved a lot. If you bought it and haven't picked it up since because you were bummed out about the release, go check it out again. Things are much improved. I really like the story. I'm digging the gameplay. I think all the recent stuff they've done to give players more control over their experience have been really great. But I still cannot stand this guy.
This feels awesome. Like before I just felt like a big wimp. You know what I mean? My stomach was all acidy and I really just wanted to eat some fish tacos. But now, I mean, this feels great. Like we're gonna kick some ass. This feels awesome.
Oh my gosh, he's annoying. Is there a way to patch him out, please? First up in the news, Rocket League going free-to-play and leaving Steam for the Epic Game Store on the PC platform. Everywhere else it exists will continue to be where it is. Rocket League, the cars playing soccer multiplayer sensation, been around for a few years now, is going free-to-play this summer. Developed by Psyonix, announced on Tuesday. The game currently costs $19.99. It will add cross-platform progression for players' item inventory, that is, Rocket Pass progress, and competitive rank. The update will also coincide with the game's debut on the Epic Game Store and its removal from the Steam Store. Psyonix said the Steam players will still get updates and will be able to play with those on other platforms. Rocket League is available on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One after the change. Rocket League players who have played prior to the game's free-to-play Switch this summer will get the following items. All right, so here's what you get for being an OG player of the game when you spent money on it. All Rocket League branded DLC released before the free-to-play, so everything leading up to this. An estimated 20XX title that displays the year when the player first started playing Rocket League. So if you started playing in 2017, it'll say that. 200 plus common items upgraded to legacy quality. Common Cosmos boost. DC Oro wheels, whatever the hell those are. And Huntress player banner. All right, this feels like a little bit of a bummer, and it's a tricky thing to navigate, right? So the folks over at Epic bought Psyonix and said, hey, we're going to buy you and your game. And now they own it and they want to bring that experience over to the Epic Store, take it off of Steam. That's kind of a bold move because they know that's going to piss people off, especially those who paid for your game way back in the day. However, I think all of that stuff's a pretty good deal. All the prior DLC up to the point of release of the free-to-play version, that's a pretty strong value and worth way more than $20 would get you in the game if you had to buy all that. So I think I'm okay with it. Also, more cross-platform stuff is a great idea. So a tentative thumbs up. I think on the PC side, you're gonna run into some anger issues, but for the most part, good on you. And that game's still great, by the way. Spider-Man Miles Morales will be playable in 4K, 60 frames per second, all that on a PS5. Spider-Man Miles Morales will be playable in the 4K resolution at 60 frames per second, according to developer Insomniac Games. They said this on Twitter on Monday, thanks to an optional performance mode, quote-unquote. Marvel's Spider-Man ran at a solid 30 frames per second on PlayStation 4 and PS4 Pro, based on an analysis by Digital Foundry, but it's not clear what the compromises Spider-Man Miles Morales will have to make to achieve the 4K 60 frames per second performance. It's possible that features like real-time ray tracing and other rendering effects could be disabled in a performance mode to emphasize frame rate and resolution. On PS4 Pro, Sony and its first-party developers have given players the option to prioritize frame rate or resolution, as well as other fidelity settings, in games such as God of War, The Last of Us Remastered, Uncharted 4, and The Last Guardian. Spider-Man Miles Morales will be revealed for PS5 in June. The follow-up to 2018's Marvel Spider-Man will be a standalone game with a reportedly smaller scope than the Peter Parker adventure you all own now. Sweet. Take advantage of the tech. Make it look as good and play as smoothly as humanly possible. But it's still a little bit of a bummer to hear that the next generation consoles can't reliably do full effects at 4K at 60 frames. Now, you hear me saying that knowing that a lot of PCs with maximum settings can't do this either yet very well. So what I hope happens is a lot of these games will just let us do like we do with our PCs and knock the resolution down a notch. I have a 4K monitor. A lot of games run great at that, but some don't. So in those cases, I like to knock those down to the next lower resolution, not all the way to 1080p, unless I have to. But give us that option, right? Also, in theory, because I'll still be rocking in the living room, probably my 1080p screen won't be 4K. Will this have any impact on me at all? Will this all run extremely smooth at 1080p? It should, right? So I don't know. A lot of those questions haven't been answered yet. Maybe they haven't been asked yet, but I hope Sony's thinking of some of that stuff. I still have some concerns about the game itself, but the closer we get to it, the more cool I am with the idea of a smaller scope. That other game was freaking huge, and nothing wrong with big, but if you're going to, you know, noodle it down a little bit and be a little more focused on the gameplay, I think that's probably an okay thing.
Email.
We received an email, a piece of feedback from a listener, from a viewer, I guess. You're not a listener. You listen and you watch, right? You do both. His name is Shucker. That's a cool name. I was interested to hear you make the distinction between games and Microsoft Flight Simulator is something I've been thinking about since I finished Gris. When I completed it, I wasn't sure I played a game as much as I was led through an interactive story / experience. Then I thought about other games. Then I thought about other Sims, Telltale Games, Myst, and even those Choose Your Own Adventure shows on Netflix. Still not 100% sure what makes a game a game. Not too sure it matters either. I still find it interesting I can play games like Gris, not have fun or enjoyment from it, per se, but still walk away being glad I experienced it. Are there other games that you would or wouldn't consider games? Keep your stick on the ice, Shucker. Well, Shucker, I also like hockey. Okay, so I was thinking about Shipbreaker, which I've talked about a couple of times. I really, really like Shipbreaker. Hard space, colon, Shipbreaker. And I think part of the reason I like it is it is a simulation mixed with game, has game elements in it, has progression, has the ability to build out a talent tree, to improve my tools, stuff you expect to see in a video game. But it's also just about disassembling stuff. It's work. It's a job. It's like working at a place like a junkyard where you're supposed to take cars apart and sell the parts for junk, for scrap. Like they've made a simulation of disassembling spaceships and selling them for money. And I don't know what the difference between that is and, say, Microsoft Flight Simulator. Or what's the difference between that and Diablo? Like, why is Diablo more of a game than these things? Maybe they're not. See, I love these kind of philosophical questions about what games actually are. Unfortunately, I've spent some additional time in the game called the Epic Grind for Loot. No, what is it? Hold on. The Amazing Loot Grind. You can see it on my phone right here. Anyway, in this game, you may be familiar with it. You hit a little treasure chest. Beep. Opens up and it gives you some loot. And if the loot's better than what you have, you equip it. If it's not, you sell it and then you do it all over again. And you just kind of keep going until you fill that your kind of Diablo style character sheet and have all the best possible stuff. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's barely a game. It's not really a game, but why am I compelled to play it? And this is old too. I keep picking it up. Why? Why? The numbers go up. The colors get better. The gear scores are higher. Those little green arrows that say, ooh, this is better than the last piece of armor you had on. Like, it does all the stuff that a video game might do for me, but with the least amount of resistance, right? Let's just open the chest. If it works, if it doesn't, whatever, make your choice, hit the chest again. What it cuts out is all of that in-between stuff where I'm blowing stuff up, killing guys, moving through a dungeon, whatever. I'm not saying I prefer that experience, but I'm saying my brain is getting some similar stimulus out of this stupid loot grind game. So what is a video game? Don't have an existential crisis over this. I'm just asking the questions. What is a video game? Your feedback would be appreciated. Send it to scott@frogpants.com or comment below. I'll read those. And if you have something good to say in there, we'll use it on the show. And now of little consequence today. When I play Animal Crossing, I always have a nice relaxing time. But there was a time early in the game's release, I want to say mid-March, a little while, maybe a week after it came out, where I tried to summon a demon in my living room, and I thought I would share that footage with you now. That's it for today. Keep those emails coming. ScottofFrogPants.com. Thank you so much for your nice comments and your feelings and thoughts about this thing. Apparently you guys like it. We're like 15, 14 episodes in, whatever it is, and you guys are digging it. I plan on keeping it going and keep growing it. Tell your friends and come back tomorrow for more, won't you? Because that would be great. All right. We'll see you then. Bye. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Blah. It's July 22nd. Nope, that isn't how that was read at all. Rocket League players also... Rocket League players who have... Marvel's Spider-Man ran at a solid 30... Solly? Prioritize. Start that over. Spider-Man Meep. Spile-Man. Hey, you guys, it's July 23rd. It is 2020, and this is Frog Pants Plays Daily with me, Scott Johnson. Okay, big Microsoft day, okay? It's a big day. This morning on the 23rd, they did a whole presentation for the what's going on with Microsoft. They basically called it their big Series X games showcase, and we're going to talk mostly about that today. But before we get too far, I wanted to mention a deal I got. Maybe you'll want to get this deal too. I don't know. A game I'd been following for a really long time, called Before We Leave. It was originally supposed to be on Steam, ended up on the Epic Store. It's part of their Epic Summer sale right now. And if you go do the sale, you get $10 toward whatever you want, because this is what Epic does. They give you a $10 gift certificate to whatever you spend money on. So currently that game's on sale for $15, and I got the $10 coupon. In the end, I paid $5 for this game I've been wanting so bad. No brainer. So go check it out. It's this rad little 4X game without the combat, and I can't wait to dig into it later. But some deals can be found and had. The big games shown at the Xbox Series X Games Showcase. That's what we're going to talk about. Microsoft's Xbox Game Showcase today ran down a lineup of games coming to the Xbox Series X and Xbox One and PC. The company's next console is scheduled to arrive this holiday season. Unlike its competitors like Sony, Microsoft has emphasized throughout the run-up to this console, these games will be playable even if you don't pick up that piece of hardware right away. All of the games announced at this show will be on Xbox Game Pass at launch, and many of them will be released on the Xbox One and Windows PC. All of these games will be available to you if you are a subscriber to that service. I'll talk more about that a little bit later. They showed off 22 total games that will appear on the Xbox consoles, and in some cases, the PC as well. This included 10 brand new game announcements. Let's get to some of them now. The games that stood out for me. Halo Infinite. At first, I was a little bummed because the first thing he did was get off a ship and shoot one of those little squiggly guys that are in all the Halo games. And that made me think, oh, I don't want to do more of that. I want something special. But as that demo went on, you got to see more and more of what looks like an open world. And some have said this might be Far Cry Halo Edition or Far Cry Infinite. You're going to do a lot of sort of the Far Cry types of things in this world. I haven't been following it too close. Maybe that's true. But I did like what I saw, and I like the idea a lot of a more open world approach to Halo. So Halo Infinite, looking good. Then they showed State of Decay 3, which is a sequel to State of Decay 1 and 2, obviously. I really liked both State of Decay games. In particular, I really liked the first one. Was originally, I think, an Xbox summer game type thing for the 360, if I remember right. But anyway, they ended up doing a PC version, which I quite liked. State of Decay 2, on the other hand, pretty good game. A lot more deeper systems, that sort of thing. But for some reason, I kind of fell off of it pretty quick, and I don't know why. They didn't show any real gameplay. This all looked like pre-rendered cutscene stuff, or maybe it was on the hardware. They didn't actually say, but State of Decay 3 coming, and we'll see what we think of that. I actually like that world, so I'm sort of into it. Stalker 2. I never played the first Stalker, so I have no idea what we're getting into here. It did definitely look like blown out, horrible, post-accident Chernobyl-style stuff, which I know the Stalker game is famous for. Whether it holds up to anyone's expectations about what a Stalker game is, again, no idea. It looked cool, though, and a little scary, which means I probably won't play it. A big surprise and a real positive shout-out goes to a game called The Gunk. This comes out of the SteamWorld Dig, SteamWorld Heist people. Those SteamWorld games are amazing. I don't know if this is also set in the Steam world that they've created, but they've never made a bad video game. There's no such thing. Hand of Gilgamesh was the last thing they did, and I also really like that. So high hopes for this. It looked really neat. This is a big 3D world. They're not used to doing that either. Most of their stuff is 2D. And from what I can tell, you're just removing a lot of gunk from a lot of stuff. And I'm sort of in just on the visuals alone. They showed off Forza Motorsport. I only put this one in here because graphically it does look pretty impressive, but also I think it's interesting that it doesn't have a number on it. It is just straight up Forza Motorsport. Whenever they do a reset like that, there's two things at play. Either you're doing kind of a reboot, or you're basically saying, this is the new platform and we build out on this platform and sequels mean nothing. We just keep adding content for years and years and years. I think that's probably what they're going to do. Same thing happened with Fable, which they saved till the very end, and there have been rumors for a long time about a new Fable game. One would assume that that game would come back eventually. Petered out pretty hard on Fable 3, as I recall. I don't think I liked that game very much, but I remember loving Fable 2. In particular, I thought Fable 2 was one hell of a game. So finally, get your hands on a new Fable game. This looks like a return to the roots of the series, and again, no sequel number. This is not Fable 4. This is Fable, and it featured a fairy getting eaten by a frog, which was pretty rad. All right, the one that made me get the most excited, I think, was finding out that Obsidian Entertainment is working on Avowed. This is their next big secret RPG. My first impression was immediately very Skyrim-y in terms of the point of view. Sword in one hand, magic in the other. It looks beautiful. I love these guys. I love their RPGs. I am beyond stoked for whatever Avowed is, and I hope it gets here sooner than later. I'm getting on the treadmill right after this just so I'm healthy enough to live for however long it takes, because that looks amazing. The rest that didn't really jump out to me that were that big a deal were the following. Phantasy Star 2 Online New Genesis. Great. Phantasy Star, if you're into that, that's cool. Tetris Effect Connected. Looks like Tetris Effect, and we'll still have the same campaign for the single-player stuff in it, but it will feature multiplayer and co-op. They didn't get real specific about how many people, but they left the impression that they had all these people in a giant grid, and they made it seem like, oh, tons of people will play, kind of Tetris 99 on the Switch style, but I don't think that's the case. So it's probably like four players, maybe even two players. I don't know. Not a lot of info. Tetris Effect is already rad. Worth mentioning. Crossfire X looked cool. Military future-y hoo-ha. Didn't really jump out at me, but there it was. Destiny 2 Beyond Light. It's more Destiny. You know what you're getting there. The Outer Worlds Peril of Gorgon. More content for that is great. Psychonauts 2 looked weird, man. That thing, they showed some backstage video or some behind the scenes video of Jack Black singing. And it was good. He sang great and all that. But the game itself just looks really psychedelic and strange. And I'm not sure I'm in. I don't know yet. Some people I know, that's their favorite video game of all time. The first one. So they have really high expectations for two. I'm personally slightly nervous. And I also think that thing's coming to everything. PlayStation, Switch, all of it. Some quick thoughts on the presentation overall. I really liked it. I thought it was right up there with Sony's. In fact, maybe exceeded it in a couple of ways. It was more consistent with the quality of the presentation. In the Sony event, you had some developers who would get on camera and it was clear they were on very different mic systems and their lighting was weird and it wasn't great. Sort of this pandemic video presentation thing was really showing for them a little bit. In Microsoft's case, across the board consistent. Everybody sounded and looked great. All the developers that talked about their games that are upcoming. It all just sounded really cohesive, more like a Nintendo Direct, just a tight production. And I was really impressed with that. Of course, that's not what sells game consoles. So, you know, take that for whatever it means. But I thought their presentation was dead on. Game Pass continues to look like the best deal in gaming, like by a mile. They mentioned a couple of times and it was already clear. And I mentioned it at the top of this show today, everything they showed that was first party will be on Game Pass. And will be available immediately on Game Pass when they launch. So you don't have to go pay $60-$70 for any of these games. They're just there to play. I am telling you, in a world that is shifting to a $70 price point for the average AAA title, Game Pass is going to be the bomb because you get them on PC, you get them on the console, and they slipped out that you'd be able to play Destiny 2 on mobile, which sounds to me like an xCloud possibility, which they didn't get into today at all, really, but I think that subscription will probably include that as well. That is one hell of a value, and I think I would much rather pay $15 a month for all of that game access across these multiple platforms than I would spending piecemeal $70 a pop. That's really compelling. I think it's going to be their strongest stake in this whole next generation. So now I'm kind of really torn. I was feeling very PlayStation 5 friendly as of just a couple of days ago. I still am. I think these guys are really neck and neck in terms of what they are trying to deliver. They're both going to be great experiences. But on the services front, which Sony's been very quiet about, I feel like Microsoft's going to own them on that front. Like I am more Xboxy at the moment than I have been this entire process. So I don't know, man. Maybe Microsoft may have convinced me that I don't even need an Xbox next generation. They may have convinced me just to stick with PC Game Pass because all of that big stuff's coming to Game Pass anyway. A lot of little stuff too. Like I get a lot of value out of that $5 on PC Game Pass. So I don't know. In a way, they sold me on Xbox, but not an actual Xbox. I'm not sure that's what they meant to do, but we'll see.
Email.
Quick comment we got here on the YouTubers. This is from Dave Harp, and he said this. Really loving the show, Scott. Now part of my daily watch/listen routine. Keep it going. Well, I'll keep it going. Here I am, keeping it going. Thanks for that. Those very nice comments. Usually I try to put questions in here that I, you know, have to do some long answer to. But once in a while, I just like to showcase that, hey, you guys seem to be enjoying this, so I'm going to keep making it. And if you don't like it, you should tell me too, right? That's fine. I have no problem with that. But nothing but good comments so far, and that makes me very happy. It means a project's going well. So I'm in it to win it, and I'll be here for as long as you'll have me. And now, of little consequence, do you guys remember that? Okay, so was it last year, I guess? That Lighthouse movie that came out with Edward the Vampire and Willem Dafoe in it? And it was really weird. It was shot in like square ratio, like one by one, and it was all black and white. And it spent all of its time in and around this little lighthouse shack out in the middle of who knows where in, I assume, the 1800s. Anyway, they're not ever very clear about that stuff, but it's really, really like claustrophobic on purpose. Like it's an intense thing. I would actually recommend it, but it's really weird. And I thought you guys might want to watch Willem Dafoe chew out Edward's character, whatever his name is. I can never remember his name. He gets chewed out a little bit and is told not to deny it. Enjoy.
Don't deny it.
That's going to do it. Thank you all for watching. Love your feedback. Please send more. Scott@frogpants.com is the email account. You can find me on Patreon, patreon.com/frogpants. And for everything else, go to frogpants.com or leave a comment below. I like that stuff too. I reply to them all, or at the very least like them if they don't need a reply. I'm really paying attention to that stuff right now. So do not hesitate. If you have something to say or something to ask, just say it down there and we'll have a little chat. Nothing wrong with that at all. That's going to do it. We'll be back next week on Monday because I don't do Fridays. I'll see you then. Hey, everybody, it's July 27th, 2020. You're watching Frog Pants Plays Daily. I'm Scott Johnson. All right, before we get into it, a couple quick things. There was a massive Nintendo data leak, and there was a whole bunch of cool stuff that came out of that, but also some concerning things like how did somebody get a hold of all this? And it's very much intellectual property, and I'm sure Nintendo's not happy about this at all. But it is interesting in the fact that there's a ton of stuff in that code and leaked documents that'll give you all sorts of fan service about some of your favorite games from all the way back in the NES days, things that happened on the Super NES, N64, and forward. Just a treasure trove of information that doesn't seem like it was shared or leaked on the up and up, but worth checking out. You can go find it at just about any gaming news outlet, and I recommend you do. It is just way too much to cover here. Also, I was reminded of something this week that just made me happy to see again. Sometimes I forget it happened. Got to kind of pinch myself and get excited about it again. A number of years ago, World of Warcraft put my character name in the game. So there's an in-game item named after my orc hunter that I play in World of Warcraft. And as you can see here, it's called GURPS Perfect Arrow. And some people have asked, is this still a thing I can get in the game? And the truth is, you absolutely can. You just have to go hunt around for it. But it is still in that older content. And if you happen to get it during one of their time walking events, you might get a trinket that is up to current speed in terms of its value. So anyway, GURPS Perfect Arrow, still out there, still a thing. Thanks, World of Warcraft. Kicking us off in the news, Ghosts of Tsushima's patch will let you make the game way harder. Or easier, depending on what you want to do. But the game is getting some new difficulty options thanks to its latest patch. These new options will let players make the game harder or easier, depending on what you're up for. Patch's biggest addition is the new Lethal Difficulty mode, which could provide the game's most difficult challenge to date. The mode makes everything about the game deadlier, including enemies and Jin himself. To make things more complicated, the timing windows for parrying and dodging are much tighter, so every move will have to be precisely timed. The mode also makes enemies more aggressive and better at detecting Jin when he's trying to be stealthy. The final big change in this patch that probably everyone's excited about, bigger text. Ghost of Tsushima is known for having tiny little text, and people complain like crazy. They did it. After this patch, you can increase the text and make those objectives bigger, all that stuff. So if you're like me,
and your eyes aren't what they used to be,
this will be a welcome addition. So I love when devs give this kind of attention to games after release. It's like, hey, we built a game for a long time and it took us forever to do it. And we finally hit our release date and everyone's really happy with it. But here are some things we should do, we meant to do, or just now are learning because players have their hands on it in a way that we couldn't do during testing. That, to me, is the sign of a great developer. So Sucker Punch, two big thumbs up from me, as if that mattered. Also excited, I think I'm going to pick this game up this week. I've been putting it off. As you know, the big fight was between Mario and this. I've had my way with Paper Mario. It's time to have my way with Jin and his ghost. Herman Miller in the news. They make chairs and Logitech. They're working with Herman Miller, and they want to class up your office with a $1,495 gaming chair. Herman Miller, the manufacturer of office chairs like the Aeron, the Embody, and the Sail, I don't know how you say that one, S-A-Y-L, Sail, is making a gaming chair aimed at gamers, streamers, esports athletes, and the like. The Embody gaming chair is, according to the company, quote, the industry first truly ergonomic chair, unquote. Over the last few years, the gaming world has been inundated with brightly colored, often garish racing chairs. The new Embody gaming chair, the result of a partnership between Herman Miller and Logitech, is decidedly more low-key, except for maybe a little splash of blue on the backside. That's how I like it, a little splash of blue on the backside. It looks straight out of like a cubicle chair, but for gamers. All right, so I have a Herman Miller. I'm sitting on it right now. Can you hear it? This chair sits a little higher than your average chair because I have it for a standing desk that's got kind of a weird height to it. So when I want to sit, I sit on this thing, and it's been great. I've had this for like 10 years, zero problems, no complaints, no issues. Oh, I guess that means it's out of warranty finally because it has a 10-year warranty. But anyway, never had to do anything with it. It's been a great chair. Love it. Obviously, this is exciting. However, $1,495. Whoo! Whoo! So, side note, I was reading a Reddit thread, and there was a whole bunch of people talking about this chair, and some people brought up the point that if you call office supply or office furniture stores, okay, not just Office Max and things like that, but places that carry office furniture of various types, you're going to find deals. Apparently, they get a lot of refurbs back, and it's on some of their higher-end stuff, like $700 to $1,000 to $2,000 chairs that get marked down to like $200 or $300 because it's a refurb, and you never hear about it otherwise, unless you're going in there and asking. So, go ask your local furniture guy, do you got any cool gaming chairs or ergonomic office chairs because you need an upgrade, and see if they can't cut you a deal, son.
Email.
We received a communication, this one from Albert Vanderberg. This is via the comments on the YouTube video a couple of days ago. He says this, the YouTube video a couple of days ago. I sound like my mom. Glad to see Microsoft is finally putting some real effort again in developing their own games. Don't particularly like platform exclusives, but at least it shows some real devotion. I agree. I'm not much for exclusives either. I wish everything was everywhere. Sony makes amazing exclusives, but I'm kind of annoyed that the only way you get them is with Sony. But they know that, and that drives people to their platform, right? So it's a valid business decision that they're making. Microsoft has been decidedly different in that approach in the past. A lot more third party, way less first party, especially this current, to say almost last generation, Xbox One generation. So the fact that they're doubling down on what makes their console a little more free and open and out there with Game Pass and PC and everything else, they are also doubling down with acquired studios and game IPs that are being built internally so that they can have a bunch of cool exclusives as well. I think they really needed to do that. So I think it's important that they do. I think it's great that they are. The big question is, will they drive people more than Sony exclusives? And will that combination of good Microsoft exclusives or an uptick in those exclusives combined with Game Pass as a value, will that be enough to dominate or at least lead this generation in some way? Time and money will tell. Finally, of little consequence. By the way, thanks for all the messages that I'd been spelling consequence wrong for a long time. It was just a typo. I actually know how to spell it. I don't know what happened there. It's fixed now. So you don't have to tell me anymore. Okay. I know I screwed that up on the older episodes. It's good now. We're good. We're good. Anyway, of little consequence today is this video I made quite a while ago of Varian Wrynn farting. Enjoy. That's it. Find me over at frogpantsplays.com and contact me at scott@frogpants.com or leave your comments in the videos below, or the comments below is what I mean to say, because I'll answer those like we did today. I'm always happy to do those. Go to frogpants.com for everything else you're looking for. It's going to do it for me today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye. Final bug. The final bug. Shit. My am buddy. My am buddy. Wherever I go, he goes. Microsoft has decidedly, Microsoft is very decidedly, no.